This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Aidan Dunphy. Now, in the United States this week, the President, Joe Biden, got one very, very good result. His infrastructure bill was passed through the House of Representatives and the Senate. It's a $1.2 trillion bill that will, among other things, fundamentally give a big upgrade to infrastructure in the United States, which by all accounts is very bad and surprising for a first world country. It's roads, airports, bridges and stuff like that. It's a victory, and he may well get a second victory when another $1 trillion project, if it's passed, which will be more to do with social policies about schools, about poverty, about unemployment, about mortgages and stuff like that. All of these things are very, very important because in recent times, the Biden administration has had its setbacks, and the result would be in the second bill would be good indeed. We're joined now from Washington by Niall Stanage. Niall is the associate editor of The Hill newspaper and the White House columnist for The Hill. Niall, in relative terms, it's not a bad week for Biden, although we understand his poll numbers are still not great.
Yeah, that's right. The poll numbers are a problem. I mean, just last weekend, he was down to 41% approval in a new Washington Post poll. That was the lowest number in that survey of his presidency. Having said that, him and his people obviously hope that this is the point after which they will bounce back up again. And the two bills that you mentioned are a central part of that argument or thesis. The infrastructure bill, which he signed into law on Monday, includes more than $100 billion for roads and bridges, $65 billion for improved internet access, $66 billion for Amtrak, the main train service here, other things of that nature. So that's a big deal, and Biden has been on the road himself trying to sell that measure this week. And then in addition, it looks like the House of Representatives is going to pass the bigger bill, and the social spending bill that was delayed late on Thursday night after Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader in the House, gave a marathon speech, more than 8 hours, just simply trying to postpone a vote. But the House at least is likely, it seems, to pass that bill, perhaps sometimes on Friday. It will then go to the Senate. Obviously, Democrats have a razor-thin majority, but they will hope to get it through the Senate. And if that does happen, then it will be a second significant legislative achievement for Mr. Biden within a very short period of time.
Yes, and with exactly 12 months now, or just about 12 months to the midterm elections for the House of Representatives and the Senate, the second bill in particular, I mean, infrastructure takes a long time to manifest itself in terms of buildings and railway tracks and whatever. The social care bill would actually manifest itself a lot quicker, and they would have something then to campaign on. Because These numbers, 1.2 trillion for the infrastructure and a similar or even larger amount of money, this is massive, even in the context of the world's richest country and indeed political history, isn't it? I mean, how far back do we have to go to find bills of this magnitude?
Probably toward Lyndon Johnson in the 1960s and the push for the so-called Great Society, which included a lot of increased social spending. I mean, in recent years, the biggest bill passed, and the most significant bill passed, was certainly President Obama's Affordable Care Act. But the actual money involved here is indeed massive. The bigger social spending bill, depending how you define it, is 1.75 or 1.85 trillion. So what you're talking about is 3 trillion between the two bills that we're talking about, in addition, of course, to an exceptionally large COVID recovery bill that has already been passed and put into action. So this is a massive program of spending that President Biden has at least got sort of half through with the likelihood or the possibility of the bigger social spending bill also passing. So it is a major transformation, and it'll be something that will at least give Democrats something to run on in next year's midterms, even as Republicans worry that spending on such a scale is stoking inflation, which of course is already a problem.
Yes, and inflation is a real problem, and it rose its very ugly head during the week in Washington. In terms of the social spending bill, what kind of measures? I saw some of them, and they were really in a European or certainly in a British or French context. They weren't that revolutionary, but in American context, they are. They help people go to school. They help people with childcare. Can you give us some of the measures and some idea of the sums?
Yeah, absolutely. So in relation to childcare, for example, it provides a significant, it ensures that a certain proportion of people's wages will be the cap for which people will pay for childcare.
Right.
It provides for universal, what's called pre-K here, which is pre-kindergarten, early education for toddlers. But I mean, I take your point that some of the things are quite modest. To give one example, one is an expansion of Medicare, which is the program that covers medical expenses for older people, to include hearing, but it still does not include vision or dental work, for example. So that's an issue. The other point, just to address your thing about a European comparison, the United States is one of the few, if not only, first world nations that does not have paid family leave. And right now, the proposal is for 4 weeks of paid family leave. That may get struck out in the Senate, where a couple of conservative Democrats, in particular Joe Manchin of West Virginia, are not enthused by that idea. Paid family leave is extremely popular in polls, but might not make it to the final bill in any event.
Yeah, it's what we call holidays.
Well, it's actually maternity leave and paternity leave is what we're talking about, or leave for bereavement and things like that.
Of course. Now, also this week, Niall, the president spoke to the Chinese president Xi. They had a kind of Zoom call. How did it go?
Well, it went okay, I suppose. It didn't really produce any concrete outcome, nor was it necessarily expected to. On one level, it sort of provided a channel of communication, and the White House in particular has been talking about the need to sort of have guide rails so that relationship doesn't veer completely into dangerous territory. Yes. Having said all that, I mean, Biden raised the issue of China's human rights abuses the Chinese premier in return blasted the United States for, as he put it, playing with fire on Taiwan.
Yes.
And then after the summit, there was one of these unfortunate slips where, frankly, Biden says the wrong thing and then has to clear it up. He when he was in New Hampshire selling that infrastructure bill that we just talked about, he referred to Taiwan as being independent.
Yeah.
American policy in Taiwan is very complicated, but it doesn't actually consider Taiwan independent, and the Chinese take massive exception to such a thing.
Yes.
So he then had to go and clear that matter up the next day.
Now, he increasingly looks frail, one has to say, Niall, and he's not an impressive public speaker. And yet, there is no obvious alternative Democrat, if something were to happen to the president, God forbid, or indeed if in 3 years' time now, in 2024, he were to run again, he'd be 82, and he wouldn't be, as Bernie Sanders, for example, is, and indeed Donald Trump, a robust and energetic 82. He isn't that now, and is highly unlikely to acquire that robustness. And yet his vice president, Kamala Harris, has really been invisible. And one reads in the past week or two that the relationship between the vice president and the president is not great. And with her lack of visibility, she would not be a candidate or an obvious candidate in 2024 should something persuade President Biden not to run again.
That's right. To start with the Kamala Harris point, there have been a number of stories now that have alluded to mutual frustration, I would say, between the Kamala Harris camp and the President Biden camp. And the most damaging of those maybe was a few days ago when CNN, its website rather than the TV version, carried a very good, very in-depth story, which really exposed those tensions in a very telling way. It had on the record quotes, for example, from a friend of Kamala Harris talking about the fact that she felt that she could be more helpful but was not being asked to be by the Biden administration. I know that within the Biden team there is frustration and annoyance because Kamala Harris has unfortunately a record of staff infighting that has dogged her all the way back to when she served in office in California, first at a state level and then in the Senate. So all of that is a problem. I know, incidentally, you and I were talking about this off air yesterday,
yes.
And since then it has emerged that Kamala Harris's communications director is leaving. A woman by the name of Ashley Etienne is going to leave next month, which again shows this sort of concern about all these bad stories. My point really is that under normal circumstances, a much younger, more vigorous vice president would clearly be the heir apparent to an aging president. There's a real question mark over that in this case because of these missteps and these negative stories about Vice President Harris. But if it's not her, then who is it? And that's not a particularly clear. There's not a particularly clear answer to that question. Some people talk about Pete Buttigieg, now the transportation secretary. I'm not personally particularly wowed by Buttigieg, but there we go. And beyond that, the Democrats have, as they say here, a very thin bench. They don't have a whole lot of people lining up who are particularly impressive.
No, and there tend to be dynasties in presidential politics, remarkably, for a republic.
Mm.
Well, the Bush dynasty, the Kennedy dynasty, even the Clinton dynasty, which an effort they made, and I think Chelsea is still probably on some list, although that project may be doomed.
Well, not sorry, not to cut across you, Eamon, yeah. I rarely do, but on that topic, the best candidate that Democrats could have by a mile won't run, and that's Michelle Obama. Michelle Obama would win a Democratic primary easily, but has no way, perhaps to her credit as a human being, has no interest in pursuing elected office.
Yes, and I think she may have said that this still has the job she'd want on planet Earth, right. Which does really speak to her soul and her sense of a real life. It is a monstrous job, isn't it?
Oh, it's a terrible job in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, you are the White House columnist. You're in there. Mm. You watch them very closely. And unless you have the constitution and character of a Donald Trump, in other words, unless you're a total showman with no sense of responsibility to anybody except yourself, it's a tough, tough job, isn't it?
Oh, it is, absolutely. I mean, and you can see that physically in most people. I mean, Barack Obama looked much more than 8 years older the 8 years that he was in the presidency. Yes. And I think the same is true of many presidents. The same probably wasn't true of Trump, but then he was spending a lot of his time watching cable TV and tweeting. And, you know, I'm not even saying that. I mean, I don't think it's great for a president to be doing that, but I'm not saying that specifically to mock him. That is literally what he spent a lot of his time doing. And obviously not
fretting over Taiwan and the geopolitical mess that might arise if somebody presses the wrong button somewhere.
Exactly. Those sort of burdens do afflict and affect most presidents a lot. And that circles all the way back to your original point on this topic, Eamon, which is Joe Biden, who does, you know, look and sound old. And, you know, it is a delicate topic, but pollsters have begun asking about it. And there is clearly fairly significant concern among the population about Biden's vigor and capacity to deal with those enormous responsibilities.
Yes, and the consequences in 12 months' time, if the Senate and the Congress, I think in the House of Representatives, the majority is 7. I think I may have misspoke in a recent conversation we had and said it was 3, but the majority is 7, correct?
I would need to look because there are vacant seats. It's very, very small. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, it's 50-50 in the Senate, which gives Joe Manchin an awful lot of power, or any other individual senator who decided not to vote with the party.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I want to move on just a bit now to this development with Steve Bannon, one of Trump's aides, shall we say, maybe the brains behind the Trump campaign initially. Bannon has been subpoenaed by the congressional committee that's inquiring into January the 6th and the insurrection at the Capitol. He refused the subpoena, but now he has been charged, has he?
He has. He has become the first person since 1983 to be criminally charged with contempt of Congress. People have been held in contempt by the Congress, but not dragged before the courts. Biden is now before the courts.
And Bannon.
Bannon, sorry, pardon me. A very, very important distinction to me.
At the moment.
Yes.
But he was, I did see video of him boasting that they were going to take Biden down and making other sort of insurrectionary speeches on the way. He was talking to a camera. He's out in the open now, and he's willfully speaking insurrection, isn't he?
He is, yes. I, as I think you know, Eamon, know Steve Bannon a little bit, as many reporters here do. And he loves two things in particular. One is publicity, which he's getting a lot of now. And the other is a view of politics as a kind of warfare. He talks in kind of martial terms about politics all the time. And the recent events have given him not just great license to do that, but an enormous platform to do it. I mean, after he was criminally charged, he was the lead story on the New York Times and other websites. His first public appearance, the one that you're referring to, got massive coverage here. And he, as you say, referred to the Biden regime, talked about the idea that his charge, which is technically a misdemeanor, would be a misdemeanor from hell for Biden and Merrick Garland, the Attorney General. And he is reveling in this, even as he faces the theoretical possibility of going to jail.
Yes, and one should say that there is substance to the charge, because on a podcast, on his own podcast, the day before January 6th, January 5th, he said, there is going to be trouble tomorrow. We are going to get rid of Biden. We're going to do this and we're going to do that. It was really rebel-rousing stuff coming from someone who should have been at least within the law.
Yes, he predicted on that podcast specifically, and I think I have the quote right in my mind, that all hell is going to break loose tomorrow. And of course,
which suggests a conspiracy of kinds. It suggests premeditation. It suggests that when Trump went out the following morning and gave that incendiary speech, that these things were planned and they weren't spur of the moment.
That's right. And that's the linkage that the actual House investigation is trying to get at. The House investigators want to know more about contacts that Steve Bannon had with President Trump, as he still then was, at that point. It is known that there were contacts. It's not known, obviously, exactly what was said between one and another. And incidentally, that goes to the heart of the legal argument. Trump, and by extension, Bannon's legal argument is that those contacts are covered by executive privilege, as it's known. And the counter-argument is that Steve Bannon had been for a long time a private citizen at that stage, and that you can't claim executive privilege for such contacts.
No, and didn't a judge find against Trump as well in terms of privilege over papers and documents which might show what he was doing while this insurrection was taking place?
Yes, that's correct. A judge did indeed find that. Trump then appealed. To make a long story short, the records are not being released quite yet, pending the completion of that legal road, which, as we have talked about in other cases before, Eamon, looks quite likely to end up before the Supreme Court, where, of course, Donald Trump nominated three of the nine justices who would adjudicate such a thing.
Can they run the clock down to next November and, well, a new House and a new Senate can Bannon and Trump attempt to stall and make these investigations by this House committee overseen by Nancy Pelosi, one must remember, can they make it redundant by just stalling?
That's clearly their intention. They hope that Republicans will win the majority a year from now. And if that were to happen, Republicans would immediately demand this, disband this committee. The question really is how fast the courts rule on these various challenges.
Yes.
And that is something that we don't really have an enormous amount of public guidance on. In one instance, they moved a case fairly rapidly. But obviously, if you're very high-paid lawyers, as Mr. Trump and Mr. Bannon do, those people are expert at finding pretexts upon which to delay or to seek new hearings or things of that nature. And that could indeed delay things significantly. And if that happens, then they're home free, potentially.
Now, this character, Kevin McCarthy, who is the minority leader in the House of Representatives, in the event that they get a majority, which seems highly likely, he is going to be the Speaker of the House of Representatives. He will be in the office that Nancy Pelosi now holds. He's a particularly unappealing politician, and I say that not with any bias against conservatives, but his craven bowing down and kowtowing to Trump to the extent that he went and paid a visit to Mar-a-Lago a couple of times, I think. He is also reactionary and rather dangerous in some ways when you think of that as such a high office.
I think that's right. And I think that the danger in McCarthy's case lies not in some deeply embedded ultra-conservatism, but lies in his weakness, to put it perfectly bluntly.
Yeah.
He has a tendency to bend with the prevailing winds. Obviously, the prevailing wind has been pretty Trumpian in recent years, and he has gone in that direction. He is typically criticized, even by internal critics, as sort of lacking backbone. And that is a bit of a problem.
I feel in the coming Trump era, lacking backbone would be a virtue.
Well, it would certainly be good for your career advancement, which tends to be why people are so flexible in that regard or spineless in that regard. So, you know, McCarthy, for example, this marathon speech that he gave late on Thursday night to delay the vote on the
big...
8 hours, just over 8 hours. That seems very much catered to Trump. And in fact, McCarthy had earlier said that he and the Donald had spoken earlier Thursday, although he didn't give any indication of what they had spoken about. But look, Kevin McCarthy would clearly, as Speaker, follow the dictates of a Republican Party that has become much more Trumpian, has really become a vehicle for Donald Trump's ambitions and also his resentments, I would say.
Finally, Niall, we are very quick here in this country to claim, for example, Joe Biden has very clear antecedents in this country and he comes from Ireland effectively. And we claim people really quickly, the Kennedys and all kinds of people, even Barack Obama had relatives in Offaly. We haven't yet got to the bottom of Kevin McCarthy, and we're not claiming him at all. Is there anything you can tell us and our listeners about this, the lineage here, about what part of Ireland the McCarthys come from, and where is, why did his parents call him Kevin, which was my own brother's, my late brother's name, God forbid?
Well, Kevin McCarthy's paternal grandfather was Irish, that I can tell you. I don't know where in Ireland he was from, so I can't shed much light on that. But I think your point is my impression from across the Atlantic is that there's a great deal more enthusiasm for claiming Democrats as Irish than Republicans. I presume, for example, that Mr. Bannon, who we've just been discussing, is of some Irish heritage, but we don't seem in a great rush to claim him either. So, there is actually, just to be serious for a moment, there is actually a thing where Irish America is actually much more conservative generally than people in Ireland tend to recognize. That may be changing a bit. There may be more awareness of it. But, your, as it were, stereotypical Irish American citizen here is certainly quite socially conservative and are the kind of people who I would say moved away from the Democratic Party maybe in the 70s and 80s, having been a fairly reliable Democratic voting bloc up until that point.
They'd be rednecks, wouldn't they?
They'd be. Well,
we don't talk about that. They were there in the old days.
Well, rednecks specifically are descended from my people. Rednecks are typically northern prods and Scots who went to places like West Virginia and Appalachia. Irish Americans are typically urban people who've moved to the suburbs and become more right-wing as they've acquired a little bit of money.
Well, now, I had a quick guess, and I haven't got numbers, but I didn't see many Irish rednecks following Martin Luther King in his walk to Washington.
No.
But that's a debate for another day.
It is. It's very ignoble history, the Irish American record on race. But anyway,
Niall, we're very grateful to you, as always, for joining us from Washington. Niall Stanage is the associate editor of The Hill, a respected Washington newspaper, and the White House columnist for that newspaper. We're grateful to Niall, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.